From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gastina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength is Not for Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.
Coming up this week, while the governor runs ads in the state's business friendliness, New York ranks dead last in the category. Our political observer, Alan Shartok, shares his thoughts on a new Siena College poll, and the New York League of Conservation Voters releases its Environmental Progress Report. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. Governor Cuomo is running ads proclaiming New York's business friendliness, but a recent set of rankings finds the state dead last in that category. As the Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt reports, the truth lies somewhere in between.
The ads, commissioned by Governor Cuomo's Economic Development Agency, feature New York business success stories, including the rapid growth of the Greek yogurt industry in the Mohawk Valley in central New York.
I'm not sure that any other state could have done what New York State has done for us.
The new New York works for business.
Other ads focus on the Nanotech Center in Albany, Smith Electric Vehicles of the Bronx, and BAE Systems in the Southern Tier, which struggled to recover from severe flooding after last year's hurricanes.
All of us were very scared for the business to move elsewhere. New York State stepped in and offered great tax breaks and incentives.
The ads are narrated by Robert De Niro and feature music by Jay-Z and Alicia Keys, all New Yorkers. Governor Cuomo says the state should have been running promotional campaigns all along just to keep even with other states, and he blames the oversight on Albany's past dysfunction. The governor says the ads address the perception that New York is unfriendly to business head on.
We're not hiding that New York has had a reputation for being an anti-business or problematic for business. And we're saying it's new, we get it, we heard it, we're different, we changed.
And it seems the state has a ways to go to convince others that New York is now, as the governor likes to say, open for business. The cable business channel CNBC ranked New York 50th out of the 50 states for business friendliness due to what they said was its onerous business regulations. The state ranked 34th in having an overall hospitable climate toward business. The cable channel did score the state number one in technology and education, based in part on the nanotech innovations, and New York is the home of many of the nation's top universities. Brian Sampson with the pro-business group Unshackle Upstate admits that obstacles for businesses still exist with the state's high taxes and higher business and living expenses. But he says there are a number of things that the governor and the legislature have done right, including passing a 2% property tax cap in 2011.
New York is much better than it was a couple years ago. When you consider from a business perspective, you know, we have the property tax cap. Property taxes were the number one tax for the business community. That's been taken care of. I think some of the state agencies are a little bit easier to work with.
But he says the state's numerous regulations, particularly environmental and labor rules, are a drawback. And he says politicians should focus on that instead of just giving out grants.
Much easier to have a headline to say, you know, XYZ company is creating 50 jobs here in New York State, and the senator and the assembly member can stand there and, you know, be a part of the photo op. But isn't it just as equal a success story when we can say, because of economic development, this company is staying? And I think we as taxpayers need to embrace that it's okay to embrace the fact that economic development dollars are being invested to retain jobs, not necessarily create those jobs.
Sampson is also concerned about a proposal that Cuomo has not rejected that would raise the tolls on truck traffic on the thruway by 45%. Heather Brichetti, the head of the state's business council, says she thinks a key positive change has been the approach to the state's budget. Cuomo and lawmakers cut over $10 billion in the past 2 years, and she says that's resulted in some fiscal stability.
Two consecutive years of a budget with no new taxes, very little, if any, additional spending. In fact, I think year-over-year decline in state spending sends a strong message to the business community that we're not going to go back to the same old cycle of we need to spend more this year, so you're going to pay for it.
Brichetti admits that when it comes to marketing a state for business growth, perception does matter. And she says to that end, the Cuomo administration's new television ads will help. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. There's a new poll now offering some hope to Senate Democrats trying to retake the Senate after losing to the Republicans 2 years ago. Siena College poll finds New Yorkers would like to see the state Senate controlled by Democrats. You've often talked about the governor maybe not wanting that.
Well, yes, there's a lot to be said here. First of all, you have to understand that the assembly is overwhelmingly Democratic. Now, it is true that they draw their own districts and all the rest of it. But when you take a look at the population in New York, it is overwhelmingly Democratic. So when you go to them with a poll and say, how many of you, raise your hands, think that the state Senate, just like the assembly, should be Democratic, the overwhelming majority say, us. We believe that. Now, that's fine. Along comes the governor, and he runs and wins political office on the basis of, I will veto any bill that is not having an outside group create a real democracy here in New York by allowing an outside group of distinguished gray-bearded judges or academics, God forbid, to draw the districts. And he went around the state and said, this is just wrong doing it this way. So he wins. Now, he gets into office, and he's got the same problem governors have all over the country, which is he's got to, you know, pull in the horns of the state budget. He's got to make it a lot tighter. He knows that's not going to happen with the progressive Democrats in the Senate. So he goes to his friends, the Republicans. Now, he's a Democrat. He's a Democrat. Well, a lot of people are saying is going to be the Democratic candidate, or at least try to be the Democratic candidate in 2016. But his relationship with the Republicans is really good, to the point that he's even talking about campaigning, or some people are speculating about his campaigning for the Republican senatorial candidates. Contrast that with Eliot Spitzer, who came in and did everything in his power to get Democrats elected. And so what has happened is it would appear that more New Yorkers want a Democratic Senate. They can't have it because the governor has allowed the Republicans in the state Senate to draw their own districts. You know, oh, great computer, draw me a district where I can't lose. And so that computer does exactly that. But just to make sure that they win, they add an extra district so that they can fool around and reallocate the bodies in an even more, well, let us just say, creative way.
We have had some standardized test scores come out this week, Alan, and yep. They did find some gains in math and English for New York students all around the state. But the issue of standardized tests in New York has been very controversial and political.
No question. Look, you know, I happen to believe that within reason, standardized tests are a good idea. I mean, you have to have data in order to hold people responsible for what's going on. Look, this is a state, as the conservatives always point out, where we spend more money than any other state of the union on our education, and the results aren't all that good. But if the truth be told, we have a sort of segregation going on in our schools. Inner cities, which have real problems in teaching, do very badly. And if you give a guy or a woman a choice of teaching in Scarsdale with $100,000+ salary or teaching in a New York City school in an endangered area and being held responsible for that, we know what people will probably, not all, but will probably do in that circumstance. So it is just a good idea to know where we are. On the other hand, we all know about teaching to the test. If the only way you're going to reward teachers is based on how they're doing in terms of these tests, then you're going to give an even greater impediment to recruiting fine teachers to go into those regions. Now, look, there are some teachers who teach much differently than others. We've all had teachers, David, you and I and everybody else, who have excited us by allowing us to do our thing, to create a pathway to learning by being creative. Tests don't measure that. tests measure the final result. They don't measure whether or not your mother is putting heroin into her veins, and therefore you have to be held responsible for what is going on in her. And I don't mean to say certainly everybody in inner city is in that, but we know that some are. And it seems to me that this business of the test scores is just fascinating. Now, are they open to manipulation? I always think they are. And we come out, you know, this year with a couple of points looking a little bit better than in the past. But I don't know what that means, to tell you the truth. I do know that this is a very tough job being a teacher. These are the most wonderful and dedicated people in the world. They need to be supported. There's an awful lot of scapegoating going on with some governors and some legislators and, you know, some of the richest people in the country. And they're scapegoating the teachers who, after all, are the closest thing to national heroes that we have.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. The New York League of Conservation Voters has released its Environmental Progress Report, scoring New York legislators on policy progress. The group has given state leaders mixed grades for their actions or lack thereof on a number of natural resource, energy, and climate issues. The Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley has more.
The New York State Legislature gets a B grade from the League's assessment of actions related to their policy agenda. 40 recommendations were put forth at the beginning of the session, with four items considered crucial, according to League of Conservation Voters President Marcia Bistrin.
And those four pieces were a sewage right to know law, a solar bill, increased funding for the Environmental Protection Fund, which is the primary funding source for environmental projects in the state, and also a piece of legislation that would have closed a federal loophole that allows waste from hydrofracking to avoid being designated hazardous waste. Those were part of a broader agenda that focused on natural resource protection, climate and energy, and environmental funding.
Several of the League's agenda items passed one chamber only to stall in the other, including legislation to pass a statewide greenhouse gas emissions limit and expansion of solar energy. Several bills await Governor Cuomo's signature, including the Sewage Pollution Right to Know Act and strengthening controls on invasive species. Marcia Bistrin says there were small victories over the course of the session, leading to what she calls a soft B grade.
The primary failure from our perspective of the legislature this year was failing to come to grips with the comprehensive energy and climate needs confronting the state. And those include certainly what the role of renewables are going to be. And part of it is going forward with the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, which is up for review. And the third piece is the way in which we transition away from our remaining coal-fired plants in western New York and some of the older, dirtier plants on Long Island. So there was a failure to come to grips with that comprehensive set of issues.
The Adirondack Council also gives the legislature mixed ratings. Legislative Director Scott Laurie says their assessment gives legislators slightly above average scores and is in line with the League's grades.
The LCV has a statewide scope, so they focus on some of the issues that we don't necessarily touch, like fracking. But I think in general that's a very fair assessment of B or B minus. We were very pleased with three or four different pieces of legislation that passed this year. The first was the Invasive Species Bill. The second one is called the Sewage Right to Know Bill, which will mandate at a water treatment plant if they release untreated water out into a water body that they'll have to notify the DEC as well as the public. The third one is a bill that will expand the size of the state's Environmental Protection Fund, the EPF. The bill will take a portion of the unclaimed nickel deposits The state gets about $115 million a year, and a portion of that over the next 6 years will go into the state's Environmental Protection Fund.
The New York League of Conservation Voters gave the legislature C grades for climate change and air quality and clean energy economy performance, and B grades for protection of natural resources and public health and transportation issues.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
A partnership was announced this week in Albany that advances nanotechnology and potentially opens doors for economic growth in the capital region and beyond. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas reports.
The College of Nanoscale Science and Engineering is partnering with global engineering firm CHA of Colony, formerly known as Clough Harbor & Associates, along with social services provider Trinity Alliance of the Capital Region. The result is nanotechnology-based economic growth for downtown Albany, including 150 new high-tech jobs and new life for Albany as a national hub for smart cities technologies. The partners plan to set the former downtown Albany centerpiece, Union Station, up as a nanotech incubator site. CNSE is leasing the property. Nano College officials say they are investing $15 million in the building, a portion of which will house top executives of CHA. CHA CEO Ray Rudolph expects the team will be moved in by year's end.
It's going to give us access to staffing, interns, recent grads that are going to help us turn their research into reality. How do we apply the things that they're conceiving and put them on the street to help goals be accomplished?
City officials submitted an application to support the Union Station project with the 8-County Capital Region Economic Development Council. Associate editor of the Albany Times Union, Mike Spain, spoke about the station.
It's the beginning of the reuse of this great old railroad station that closed in the 60s and was rehabilitated in the 80s and then closed again a couple of years ago. So it's great for Albany, and it's going to bring a lot of people down to this beautiful spot in downtown Albany.
Partner Trinity Alliance of the Capital Region is a not-for-profit social service agency whose role will entail creating nano-related education and job training for students. CEO Harris Oberlander says Trinity is building a new $5 million academic campus in Albany's South End to help support the Nano College program.
We are paving the way for Albany and all of Tech Valley's residents to experience world-class K-12 student and adult STEM education and workforce development opportunities at the Capital South Campus Center.
Groundbreaking for the Capital South Campus Center is expected in the next few weeks. That project is funded by a grant from the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. The partnership between CNSE and Trinity Alliance is touted as, quote, leading to a coordinated academic curriculum, outreach activities, and workforce training and high-tech skills, providing a strong educational path for communities who are traditionally underrepresented. Albany Mayor Jerry Jennings.
These kids need a chance, and what we have to do is change the way we've been educating our children in our cities. That's why when you take a college like this and involve them with our young people, you give them hope.
The announcement follows one made last week by Intel Corporation, one of the companies involved in Albany's ambitious Global 450 Consortium. Intel plans to invest $4 billion in ASML, a chip maker that is embracing 450-millimeter technology. The same technology, G450C, is planning to invest $1 billion in over the next 5 years at CNSE. Intel spokesman Chuck Malloy.
The work that's being done in Albany is sort of the pilot work that will eventually, we hope, get deployed to factories around the world. Doubling the capacity of a given factory while lowering the cost of the individual components is the benefit that we'll share. And we'll get that out of New York, but this particular investment will enhance that effort.
On a related note, the city of Albany has already created a new high-tech job. Officials say the chief information technology officer will provide the city with a quantum leap in social networking and e-commerce. No one has yet been selected to fill that position.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. The debate over hydraulic fracturing in New York State is growing heated in southern tier towns. Many of the town boards there have passed resolutions supporting state control over gas drilling regulation. As the Innovation Trails Matt Richmond reports, supporters are using the resolutions as a way to stem the flow of local drilling bans.
Outside Wednesday's town board meeting in Windsor, drilling advocates handed out pro-drilling stickers. 150 people showed up, a big crowd for around here, and most of them put a sticker on. The issue tonight, Resolution 24, the town board's decision in May to declare support for the state, not local governments, deciding whether fracking comes to New York.
So I asked the board if they would rescind the Resolution 24, 2012. How say you?
I say no.
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 Okay.
The town of Windsor's resolution is one of 30 or so passed by town boards, mostly in the southern tier, says Binghamton lawyer Scott Kirkowski. He says they were meant as a way to counteract the spread of local drilling bans.
There's been a movement in New York to have towns ban gas drilling or pass a moratorium, and many, many towns that, frankly, are not even in the oil and gas play have been passing these bans.
More than 100 local bans have been passed in New York, mostly by towns to the north of the southern tier and its gas-rich Marcellus Shale. The bans don't represent everyone's view, says Kirkowski.
These towns got to the point where they said, look, we don't want these people that are opposed to passing bans to speak for us.
Kirkowski is the lawyer for the Joint Landowner Coalition of New York. That's the organization circulating the resolution in favor. He says the state has undertaken a careful study of hydrofracking over the last 4 years, and that means towns should leave fracking decisions to the state. Still, Albany isn't inclined to disregard local opinion entirely. In April, Joe Martens, the commissioner of the Department of Environmental Conservation, said his agency would consider local wishes when it decides on drilling permits. Governor Cuomo confirmed that last month. That means if a town has a ban, the DEC won't issue permits there, at least not at first. And on the other side, the state has not said how towns in favor of drilling would be identified. Right now, the resolutions in support of the DEC are the only thing out there to serve that purpose. Windsor resident Hal Smith was at Wednesday's meeting. He says the resolution process was flawed because of how quickly it was passed. The town never conducted a public meeting or a poll.
This is an extraordinary issue. This is not deciding whether to pave the ball field. That's why how it was handled. Except it's the most important issue that we're going to decide in our lifetimes for this community.
Legally, because it was a resolution, the town didn't have to hold hearings. Also, because it was only supporting a state agency rather than explicitly supporting gas drilling, the resolution may have become less controversial. Critic Hal Smith said some members of the town board had a conflict of interest in voting for the resolution because they would personally profit from drilling. Town Supervisor Randy Williams, who worked for a major oil company for 32 years, is one of those board members. At Wednesday's meeting, Williams made no apologies for leasing his mineral rights to a gas company, and he said the process was proper.
I did not feel there was a conflict with this because, as was stated earlier, Resolution 24 did not say, yes, you can drill or no, you cannot. Audit said, plain and simple, let the DEC make up their mind and go from there.
According to Governor Cuomo, the DEC should make up their mind on the future of natural gas drilling in New York by the end of the summer.
That was the Innovation Trail's Matt Richmond reporting. Support for the Innovation Trail comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. The Innovation Trail is a collaboration between five upstate public media outlets reporting about New York's innovation economy. You can hear more at innovationtrail.org. And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. Copies of the program are available. Call 1-800-323-9262. That number, 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1229. Or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength is Not for Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.